You're listening to Trek FM.
This episode of To the Journey is brought to you by Squarespace, the all-in-one platform for creating a blog, website, portfolio, or online store. Create your own space today by visiting squarespace.com and use offer code TREK10 to save 10%. And also by Zoe, the world's first personal voice companion enabling Star Trek Combadge-like interactions with Twitter, Facebook, Spotify, smart objects, and much, much more. To find out more about Zoe, visit zoe.me/trekfm. That's xowi.me/trekfm. Plus, if you'd like to support our programming personally, visit trek.fm/donate to get our alien badges and art prints featuring original illustration by Tobu Ushi.
Hi, this is Robert Duncan McNeil, also known as Tom Paris from Star Trek Voyager. You're listening to Trek FM.
Maybe it's the journey. To the journey.
Hello, everybody, and welcome. This is To the Journey.
To the Journey!
And this is a very special To the Journey because this is our one-year anniversary. That's right, listeners. We have been going into your heads and reorganizing your Star Trek knowledge and dusting for prints for 1 year now.
1 year in your heads, taking over.
1 year in your iPods, in your cars, at home, at work, when you should be working, all of those things.
But we won't tell.
And so this is episode 48, and that's a pretty round number for, I mean, so that means that we took 4 weeks off.
We did.
So
slackers.
Well, I mean, everybody needs vacation every once in a while.
So. Yeah. Well, we had away missions to do. We had Vegas.
That's right.
I mean, we've been very busy people over this year. I'd say we've accomplished a lot. I feel very good about where we're at, guys.
I think so, too. I think 48 is a good, strong number, and that means that we are not getting tired and still going strong. And what better way to celebrate 1 year than to focus on a character who has been on the show a whopping 19 times?
Woo!
Yeah!
And that is Naomi Wildman, parentheses, Samantha Wildman, in parentheses.
By proxy,
the subunit.
Yeah.
By proxy, the subunit.
Yeah. Subunit of Samantha Wildman.
There we go. That's
awesome.
Great.
So, okay. So, Naomi, I love the name Naomi, and Wild Man, which is just awesome. I don't know where that came from.
Hey, wild!
Yeah, I want to know the genesis of that name. Like, what country spawned that? Like, you know that probably had to have been, like, the village idiot where they're like, that guy's just a wild man. Let's just call him that.
Wait, Tristan. Are you saying that Samantha's husband, Gress Krendrick, is a wild man?
That's his last name, Gress Krendrick Wildman?
I doubt that Gress Krendrick is... I doubt that that's Gress Krendrick's last name.
I can't imagine what his last name really is. I mean, it sounds very kind of Scandinavian, both in terms of sound and the way it's spelled. Let me spell this out for listeners who do not know how Gress Krendrick is spelled. GressKrendrick.
Yeah. Mm. See, that is Star Trek spelling right there.
Gress Krendrick, put that into the National Spelling Bee and make those 10-year-olds suffer.
Imagine when he was a child and he had to write that. What a pain.
Yeah, learning to write that name? Dude, and I wonder, we don't know much about Katarians, right?
If you look at the game in TNG, they're extremely pale and they had like two distinct lobes on the forehead with some sort of wrinkly nose, of course.
Naturally.
You know, their brow was a little different above their eyebrows. Then we see Naomi, and she just has a few horns on the forehead. So, I don't know, maybe there's different subspecies or whatnot.
It could be. I mean, they could be from different parts of the Katarian homeworld, whatever it's called. If they have a name, I don't know what it is. My bad. But I'm thinking maybe, like, Gress Krendrick is from the northern region because of the Scandinavian-esque name. Maybe it's very similar on his world, you know?
Maybe that's what happens when you blend a Katarian and human. They get horns. Maybe the
horns.
Just total genetic mutation. It's possible.
Hey, it's Star Trek. Totally possible.
Yeah. Yeah, and okay. Those horns caused Samantha some huge discomfort during labor. Let's start off with that.
Let's start off with Samantha first. We'll get to the birth, but let's talk about the announcement to the birth.
Okay.
Now, I always wanted to see more of Samantha. I mean, I know I kind of downplay it on the previous episodes about like, oh, there's not much to talk about Samantha Wildman. It's not because I don't like her. I love the character and I love the actress. I just kind of wish that they used her more. I mean, it's kind of weird that we see more of the kid than we do the parents. I mean, this isn't Rugrats or Muppet Babies, you know, like where the parents are just non-existent.
I'm imagining Naomi now as a Muppet baby with a flatter doll. Thanks.
Well, that's kind of how I always pictured Naomi. So join the club. So after Once Upon a Time in season 5, we don't see her again until Fury. And, like, there's some sort of weird time-temporal thing with Fury. So in the main timeline, we don't see her after season 5. But we see Naomi well after that for 2 years. No mom.
Yeah. You know, I think Samantha had a very lax parenting style. She was very trustworthy of Naomi because Naomi is just kind of doing her thing on Voyager, going around playing Coruscant with Seven. I guess as long as she does her homework, Samantha is happy.
Where's she going to go? She's going to wander around on the ship.
I mean, if Tom Paris teaches her how to use the Delta Flyer, she could take it out for a spin, maybe. I don't know.
She could. Because she was like a 25-year-old and a 6-year-old, and I'm using air quotes, 6-year-old's body.
Yeah.
we will get to that when we get to Naomi, because we have to talk about the age difference. But yes. The thing is, like, we've talked about this a little bit before, but okay, so season 1, we conjectured that season 1 was not a full year.
Right.
Even though it's recounted later on whenever Janeway talks about, oh, 7 long years in the Delta Quadrant. I don't know why I made her sound like that, but so season, like, we conjectured, like, okay, season 1 couldn't have possibly been a full year because we don't hear about Samantha's pregnancy until Elogium. And with humans, you don't really know if they're pregnant for, like, 2 weeks. Well, maybe with Katarians, it takes a full year, which is scary as hell if you think about it.
Yeah, right? Mm. This is how shows like I Didn't Know I Was Pregnant would be in the future. Because if you don't know you're pregnant for a whole freaking year, my goodness. And then, of course, she has the longest pregnancy ever because she doesn't give birth until deadlock, which is almost the season 2 end. 2 years of pregnancy.
Deadlock was episode 21 of season 2. And she tells us that she's pregnant in Elogium, which is episode 4 of season 2.
Yeah, and I believe it was actually shot as a part of season 1 production, but was carried over until season 2. So, but still, she's still pregnant for almost 2 freaking years.
Yeah.
My uterus hurts just thinking about it.
So let's move on to the birth. So
okay.
Oh God. Oh, cringe.
Yeah. Oh, I mean, yeah. That's, if there was ever a woman who had a rougher time with pregnancy, I'd love to hear the story, because what happened was she had a half alien baby, and for some reason they did not think about the horns being an issue, and so the baby doesn't turn, and so the horns are hitting the top of her uterus. Obviously, it's painful.
Yeah.
And then they beam the baby out, which is fantastic. And then the baby dies.
Yes. But later on, she is replaced, along with Harry, after he dies for the first time, as we recounted just about a week ago.
So now that I've given everyone an overview of the events of her birth, I want to hear from you guys what you think about that situation of Samantha's pregnancy, what it meant to the show, and also Naomi's birth. What did you guys think? Char, you go first.
Okay. First off, Samantha Wildman, wow, what a trooper for putting up with a pregnancy that long, and what a horrific delivery. It does make me wonder, though, okay, if a Katarian baby has horns, and this is probably not the first, like, half-human, half-Katarian baby ever, you know, created, don't you think that there'd be issues with this before the delivery with these horns in her uterus? I mean, wouldn't they be scraping it the whole freaking time as the baby moves around?
You'd think that the doctor would go, hey, you have a half-Katarian child, maybe we should think about this.
Yeah.
The doctor's like, eh, let's wing it. You know, let's wing it.
Now, granted, she had some kind of complications during the pregnancy, like she had some shooting pains down her legs or something like that. I mean, she was seeing the doctor off and on, and she was having an otherwise normal pregnancy.
She was being stabbed on a regular basis. That's what it was.
I mean,
maybe they don't shoot out until right before the baby comes out. It's just like
maybe they develop right before it's time to get birth.
Lungs, horns. There you go. You can be born.
It's like a very secondary, last-minute thing that happens, I guess. Which, okay, if that's the truth, then, hey, that's fantastic. That makes a lot of sense. But then, dang it, why can't they develop after she's given birth? Poor Samantha. Poor, poor Samantha.
Poor Samantha.
Yes. And then, as we sort of already kind of mentioned, she does seem to be a little bit of a lax parent, but she is working all the time. Because Neelix has to tuck her in. She's obviously working the night shift, more often than not.
Yes, she truly is.
Yes. Which I don't understand why there is a night shift. They're in space.
Yeah, and she's a xenobiologist.
You never know. I mean, you never know.
Right, this is space and a lot of weird things happen.
A night shift.
So you just kind of have to go with it. And it gives Neelix something to do, gets him out of the kitchen. And it keeps him from harassing Tuvok, so it's a good thing. He gets along well with children. He has a very good bond with Naomi. It's a good thing. All right, all right. But, yeah, the whole thing about Naomi's entrance into the world, well, it was very Voyager-esque. Let's put it that way.
Voyager-esque.
Just because of the whole thing in Deadlock where there was the two ships occupying the same space at time, or at the same time, and then the first baby dies, but then the other one on the other ship is okay, and so Harry takes that baby, and they go over to the other ship that survives. It's all a big mess, and it's like it makes me wonder, does Naomi have like an identity crisis as a result of this?
Yeah.
I doubt that she was told.
Probably not. Probably not. Harry is the only person who knows, so maybe he's the one with the identity crisis. And I bring this up because one of our listeners, Miles McLaughlin, asked us to bring this up at one point, and it kind of makes you wonder, like, okay, beyond that conversation he had with Janeway, where it's all a little weird, you know, weirdest part of the job is Starfleet officers, is he having some issues, and is that why Harry becomes the whipping boy of Voyager? I mean, it didn't start at that point, but did it continue as a result of that?
I don't know if... No. I think it's a resounding no to the whipping boy thing, but to the identity crisis, yeah, I'm sure he had a while that he had to adjust to it and think about things. And but the thing is, the duplicate Voyager didn't start until like a couple hours before, so
right.
There's really no alternate history that he has to get used to. He doesn't have to worry like, oh my god, you know, Tom has a mustache. You know, like, why is this happening? You know. It's not like alternate universe. It's just a duplicate was made in that exact moment. It wasn't like Tom Riker and Will Riker or anything like that.
Well, yeah, of course.
So I think it was a scaled down version of it. But yeah, I think he sure had an identity crisis for a couple of months, but then moved on. Lori, what did you think about the whole identity crisis and also situation of where those two people came about?
Well, as far as Naomi being born and why it took so long, I think the writers probably forgot that they made that girl pregnant. And they were like, you know what? We need something really dramatic here. So you have that baby with some horns and blah, 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 et cetera. But yeah, I don't know. I think maybe Harry would have had an identity crisis because they're thinking, okay, you're not our Harry. We can mistreat you. We can make you never have a woman. We can make... make you forever an infant. No, I'm kidding. I'm sure that's not what happened at all. It was strange, but then every birth of anything is strange in Star Trek when you think about it. I mean,
yeah,
it's true. Nobody is born under normal circumstances.
No,
I think only Keiko's kid, Molly.
No, even that.
Well, I mean, like, it was born in normal circumstances. It wasn't in sick bay.
Yeah. It was a normal birth under unusual circumstances, though, because, I mean, she has Worf delivering the child. You may now give birth.
Yeah. So you have to give her credit there, because she had to stare down a Klingon while she was giving birth.
Definitely.
Yeah.
But think about every other baby. It was all weird.
Just right. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
They all have rude entrances into the world.
So we have baby Naomi, which is played by an unknown performer.
Yeah, no credits at all.
They actually don't know who played her. It was a baby just walked on the set, demanded to be in the show. And then fast forward to young Naomi, which is played by Brooke Stevens in, what episode was that? It was Mortal Coil.
Yeah.
That's when, that was the one where they were playing with the idea of, oh wait, no, that's not when they almost killed Samantha off. That's when they almost killed
Neelix off. No, that's Once Upon a Time.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's right. That's right. So yeah, we get a different actress who had a perpetual stuffy nose.
Yeah, she did, the poor girl.
Right?
Yeah, she was congested the whole time.
I know kids are, you know, that's why we get the name snot-nosed brats all the time. But why is it that they pick so many child actors who sound like that? It's just like they can't breathe out of their nose. Like, Neelix, are you coming by?
Oh my god! Wow, this is even better than Arnold.
Yeah. My human horn is itchy.
Yeah, it's true, though. I don't know what it is about kids. Are they just not able to speak properly just quite yet, or what? I don't know.
Aww.
No, I'm not. I'm just saying there's lots of kids like that. I just don't know why they're chosen all the time for the stage and screen. I just don't understand.
I don't know.
Maybe somebody thinks it's cute, apparently.
Apparently. But thankfully, we got rid of her fast.
One episode.
And we only see her... Yeah, we only see her in one episode, thankfully. And then we get a really, really awesome actress who is a great performer and gives some great characterization to Naomi, and that is Scarlett Palmers. What do you guys think of Scarlett Palmers?
Love her. Absolutely love her. From the moment she debuted on Voyager, I have basically followed her career, seeing what this amazing lady has done. Now she's in her 20s. She's done some photography, and I know that she is very musical. She has a band.
In Vegas.
Yeah, yeah, she lives in Vegas, and she's doing her thing, and she's totally awesome, and she has ferociously beautiful red hair, which is extraordinarily long down to her waist, and it makes me insanely jealous, because it's so awesome. And she's gorgeous, and she's doing great. Yeah, she was an amazing actress as Naomi. I mean, I can't think of any other kid actor on Star Trek, certainly, that had such a great presence and an aura about her. And was not annoying, because let's face it, a lot of Trek children are not good.
No. Ooh.
Yes.
I would dare say Naomi is the exception to the rule.
Definitely in Star Trek. Yeah, definitely in Star Trek. I know that...
Definitely in Star Trek.
Kirsten Dunst had a pretty good stint. A pretty good episode in TNG.
Mm-hmm.
I thought she was pretty good. Then she just...
She went
down
off the wayside.
She peaked there in her acting ability.
Yeah,
interview with a vampire. But yeah, no, I think definitely Scarlett Palmers is by far the best child actor, and also they gave her more time to develop than any other child actor on Star Trek. Way better than Alexander.
Oh,
it certainly.
Yes.
I think a lot of it is due to the fact that they liked her. They liked the actress.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, when you get a good actress and the writers like them, then yeah, they're going to give you more stuff to do and better stuff to do. Lori, what did you think of Scarlett Palmer's and this new age Naomi?
New age. I had watched her on Reba before.
Yeah.
I had seen her on there. So when I saw her on Voyager, I went, oh my God, it's Kira. Oh my God. So, oh yeah, I loved her. She was hilarious on Reba. So yeah, that just made me like her all the more when I saw her on Voyager. She was great. And like you said, not annoying, kind of just, she acted like a normal kid, except extremely smart.
Yes. Yeah, granted, even though she was incredibly bright, because all Trek kids are, they're extremely advanced in the 24th century, she wasn't annoying like Wesley. She wasn't like the genius saving the ship.
No. No, not at all.
She was a real kid.
Yeah, and I like that they didn't have any storylines like that where her job on the ship was honorary and fun, the captain's assistant, not an actual acting ensign who would put the ship in danger and then try to save it from danger. And yeah, so this was this. I think they learned their lesson from TNG, and I felt like they're like, okay, let's make this kid exceptional, but let's not have her run the ship.
Yeah, I think they definitely did learn their lesson. That's a very good way of putting it. And Lori, speaking of Reba, I watched that show just because Scarlett Palmers was on that show. I really, you know, Reba McEntire, I don't listen to country music. She doesn't do anything for me at all. But Scarlett Palmers, I watched that show for her. And actually, you know what, we might as well just bring it up. One thing that I did find at least a little sad and midway through that run was when she was dealing with her eating disorder, which was happening in real life. You could see on the camera just, you know, watching her shrink a little bit. And then she was gone for at least, I think, a part of a season.
Mm-hmm.
And then they brought her back, though, which was really cool. And it was really nice to see her back. But yeah, anytime I'm watching a rerun, I'm kind of trying to figure out, OK, is this before or after her absence and all that?
Yeah.
Just because.
Yeah, it's we've talked about that before, and we're glad that she's healthier now and sought mm-hmm. help. But what would you guys say is your favorite Naomi moment? I'm trying to think of mine. Ooh. I always kind of loved it when she pestered Seven.
That was cute.
I love that was a thing. Like, that became a motif on the show where she would follow her around, and like there was actually one time when she was documenting her movements and trying to figure her out, and then Seven noticed it and just turned around and does the whole subunit, like Naomi Wildman, subunit of Samantha Wildman, and like state your intentions, and then she's just terrified. And then I think that's the episode where Seven regresses into like a childlike state, and they play Kata Scott for like 2 hours or something.
Yeah.
I love that. That's probably my favorite Naomi moment, because she's a real kid, and I kind of wish that they left the child interaction just between the two of them and not Seven and the Borg kids, and you know how I feel about the Borg kids. So
yeah.
What would you guys say is your favorite moments?
I think it was the first episode that Scarlett Palmers was in when she was just terrified of Seven, and they were sitting there drinking something. She was drinking something with Neelix, and Seven walked up. And she's like, oh my gosh, a Borg, don't let her near me. That was so cute to me. That was funny.
That is my favorite moment as well. It's the Borg lady.
The Borg lady.
Borg. I looked at her. I'm assimilated. I thought that was incredibly cute, because it is very childlike, where she doesn't totally understand this process, and she's deathly afraid.
Sure.
It was just very cute. It was a very good, well-acted scene. Mm-hmm. I enjoyed it.
Yeah.
We get so many different versions of this same character. I want to find out if we get more versions of Naomi than we do any other character. I want to find this out. Actually, wait, no. Alexander, probably, because there was 2 or 3 children who played Alexander, and then there was Future Alexander, and then there was Deep Space Nine Alexander.
Right. So that totally wins out right there. But you could also include the movies, where there were something like 4 versions of Spock in The Search for Spock.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So, so you had kid Spock, then you had teenage Spock, and then you had older Spock. So that's just 3 right there.
No. There was a midway. There was kid, teenage, middle ground, and then real Spock.
I don't think so.
Are we going to have to make a bet?
I thought it was just teenage.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know if you want to make a bet here.
I'm not going to risk it. You're almost always right. I've already sent you so much candy.
All right. So viewers at home, write in at trek.fm/forums and figure out who had the most actors and versions of a character. So right now, I'm going to say Alexander, with Naomi as a close second. And Char is saying that there's one more version of Spock out there. So you guys, let us know who you think has the most iterations. Internet, go. Okay, so what I was going to talk about was, we have an alternate future Naomi, played by Vanessa Branch. And that was in one of our collective favorite episodes, Shattered.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And we see her as a Starfleet officer with pips and everything. I think she was a full-blown lieutenant. And along with Icheb. And they're in the stellar cartography. It was cool to see them grown up and like, oh, crap, they're going to be trapped in the Delta Quadrant for a really long time.
Yeah.
So would you guys have liked to have seen that alternate future happen, or were you happy with just a little glimpse?
Very good question. I was very happy with what we got. Maybe a little more would have been nice, but I don't see how it would have fit.
Yeah. It would have, like, we would have had to gone to the novels.
Yeah. 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 And see more room in the novels for growth somewhere down the line. Let's learn about what happens to Naomi.
That makes sense. I would have liked that. I wouldn't wanted to have seen them the way that they said it was on the show because people had died. So they could get to where they were. I don't know. I wouldn't have wanted to see that.
You mean in Shattered?
Yeah, in Shattered. Yeah, the way that they described it in Shattered.
We also know from another alternate future in Endgame where she has a child.
Named Sabrina.
Yes.
Yes, I wanted to kind of wrap up the episode with that where... Like, there's actually, you know, we didn't really get to talk in depth about too many Naomi moments because I guess there's just so many dang versions of her.
Well, you know what? There's a lot of little moments, but she has only a couple of episodes where she's heavily featured. Like
right.
Once Upon a Time.
Now, that was Scarlett Palmer's, correct?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
That was Scarlett
Palmer's. In fact,
Palmer's.
I believe that was the first episode she was in.
Okay.
And she took over from that point forward.
Yeah, she was really young. She was really young in there.
Yeah, 8 or 9 years old.
This is one thing that I love and that I hate about Star Trek, and that's what they do to children's ages.
yeah.
Yes, let's talk about this.
Like, they can always say, like, oh, because of blah, 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 then they're going to age really fast. Like, they did it with B'Elanna's pregnancy, and they're like, because you're a Klingon, this will happen. And, like, they might as well just say, because the producers want it to happen, it shall.
Yes.
And so, okay, so, like, I'm just going to read this off of the interwebs, and since it's there, you know it's true.
Of course.
She is seen at age 2 in 2374, appearing to look about 6 years old, and then later seen from 2375 to 2378 at age 3 to 6 to look about 10 years old. And so, and it says right here, however, unlike other such characters, an on-screen explanation was provided. So we actually got an explanation why, and it's just... like they, you know, like they usually do, you know, oh, yeah, it's because you're half Katarian. So, you know, that's going to happen.
Totally makes sense. Absolutely. You have the longest pregnancy and then the shortest, like, growth spurt in childhood ever.
Yes. 2 years what? Pregnant and then 1 year to get to...
looking about age 6.
Yeah, looking about age 6, so...
That's some fast development once you're out of that womb, baby. Just bam, go!
It's best not to think about such timelines and just go with it. You know, just like let it wash over you.
And it would have been one thing if she'd just been that size, but she didn't even act like a 3-year-old. She didn't act like a 4-year-old either. That was weird to me.
Well, no, but granted, dealing with a toddler is really hard
annoying.
To integrate into stories.
Sure.
Yeah, sure. Totally get it, but kind of a lazy excuse in a way, don't you think?
Yeah, that would have been some acting on that kid's part, too. Scarlett Palmer's part.
I guess the alternative to that is, if you look at Molly, I mean, they didn't alter Molly's age because they used the same actress, I think, for the most part, you know, in Deep Space Nine and a little bit in TNG. And, you know, we got horrible storylines, and you can't really do too much because you can't have a kid, you know, memorize lines that young. I mean, anything complex. And the best episode that we got from her, which was a horrible episode. No, even then they had to do some sort of timey-wimey thing where she ages 10 years and we see like a feral Molly who's like cave woman. And that's in Time's
right.
Orphan.
Oh, wow. Yeah. I'd forgotten about that.
Yeah, so even Molly wasn't unscathed by the Trek advancement of age.
No.
It's just sort of a constant. It's a rule.
It's a rule. Like, if you're going to have a kid, they have to be accelerated in some manner. Not necessarily permanently, but definitely accelerated. Because you look at other shows, like non-Star Trek shows, they build up this drama where the characters have a kid, and then they just... they sweep the kid under the rug as much as they can because they don't want to deal with it.
Well, yeah. And now, granted, though, Voyager did have an infant on the set a little bit because we saw baby Naomi again in Basics.
That's true.
But then they skipped ahead. They skipped the toddler years and went straight to childhood.
Yeah.
Not that I blame them. It's just, I think this is just sort of a rule. It's a TV rule.
Yeah.
And, Star Trek is no different.
Well, I think that wraps it up for our discussion on the Wildmans. I think it was a pretty good discussion, and we had a lot of Wildmans to talk about. But the thing is, this is not the only thing that we were talking about on Trek.fm this week. Previously on Trek.fm, the Orb.
Looking for Parlock in all the wrong places.
Well, and you also get the feeling here that she's only... Worf really is only being rejected because she's not interested. It has nothing to do with whether or not Worf is Klingon enough or any of that. She's just not interested. She's interested in Quark.
Earl Grey.
The holodeck.
Alexander Rozhenko was conceived on the holodeck.
That's exactly right. In Worf's calisthenics program with Skeletor watching because he was just frozen there and he couldn't look away.
The ready room.
The man trap.
Well, it wasn't what Roddenberry wanted to do with it. It was what the writer George Clayton Johnson wanted to do with it. But it was basically making the character more sympathetic.
To the journey!
The doctor.
But I love that moment when Chakotay was projecting himself into the room. And he totally kneels down and gets super serious and calm like Chakotay does. He's like, what you've shown us is it's not what you're made of, but what you do or how you feel, even in season two, they start to realize the Doctor is not just a hologram. He is becoming something more. Commentary, Trek stars.
Caprica.
Prequels are sort of a constant trap that people end up going to. This thing was successful and it ended. Well, let's go before it ended and tell a different story.
Warp 5.
Klingons on Enterprise.
Having the Klingons at the very beginning of the series running through that field, do you think that was born out of the discomfort that the studio had in the idea of the prequel series to begin with?
Trek News and Views.
The Naked Time.
Gold shirts are easily ripped and disposable.
Yeah.
Blue shirts self-replicate so that they, show no damage. And red shirts whisk away sweat.
Yeah, they're highly absorbent.
There you go.
So that you can't tell that your security guards are nervous.
Literary Treks.
David R. George III, Revelation and Dust.
And it feels like an evolution for Starfleet as well in the way that they built a starbase.
Well, I'm glad that came across because that was sort of one of the things that I was going for. You want it to be an evolution in Starfleet's construction of starbases. Mm-hmm. It should be something brand new. And because it's an important station, because it's in an important location, it really needed to be, I thought, a grand station.
And that's what else is happening on Trek.fm. Well, all of that sounded crazy interesting, mainly because I was the one who was introducing it.
Well, yeah.
I'm just
you are
kidding.
The international sex symbol, Tristan Riddell. Yeah.
Okay. Ooh, I forgot about that, actually. People haven't called me the ISS in a long time. I must be losing my sex appeal.
Never forget. And before we go, let's have a word from our sponsors.
Please visit Squarespace, the web's best hosting and CMS that makes it simple for you to create a beautiful blog, website, portfolio, online store, or anything else you can think of. Go to squarespace.com for your free 14-day trial and use offer code TREK10 to save 10%. We'd like to thank Squarespace for their support of To the Journey and Trek.fm. And don't forget Zoe, the world's first personal voice companion. You can find out more about this Star Trek combadge-like device and support their Kickstarter campaign by visiting zoe.me/trekfm. That's zoe.me/trekfm. Remember to include the Trek FM portion of the URL, so when you visit, Zoe knows you heard about it here on Trek.fm. Also, if you would like to personally support Trek.fm, please go to trek.fm/donate. There you can get exclusive themed badges and art prints that we use to thank you for your contribution, and their original illustration by Tobu Ushi. Everything you donate to Trek.fm is used to cover the cost of production, storage, and bandwidth needed to bring you this programming every week. Well, we want to thank them, and we want to thank you, listeners, for paying attention and subscribing. And please, if you like us, go on iTunes and give us a 5-star rating and give us a review. And if you do, if you give us a 5-star rating, we will talk about you and give you a shout out on the podcast and how much we love you. And also, please, if you want to send us an email about a possible show idea, you can go to trek.fm/contact. From there, you can go to the drop-down menu, select To the Journey. And also, as I mentioned before, you can go to the forums at trek.fm/forums. And also, you can find us all over the place. You can find us on Zune, on iTunes, on Xbox, Stitcher, everything, everywhere. We are all over the place. Or you can just go straight to the source and go to trek.fm/PD, and there you have the entire podcast directory. Now, Char, what are we going to do next week?
Next week, we are going to do an episode revamp, which we have not done in a little while, so I'm pretty excited for this. And we are going to rework Workforce.
Because that episode, excuse me, those two episodes, and God only knows why there's two of them, need some reworking.
Well, let's wait till next week.
I'm going to have a hard time waiting.
Tristan, I can tell you're very excited to do this show next week, but
I
until then.
Until then, this has been To the Journey.
To the Journey!